thanks all for inviting us down from the library. I feel like Quakers in the upstairs library also sounds like a children's book. So the general idea is that each of us are going to explain some part of how Quakers discern truth and what that value looks like to us. So just to get started, just like a little bit of background about Quakerism in general. Quakers were started in the middle of the 17th century by George Fox, and a really big impetus for him starting this religion, or him kind of starting his movement, was this idea of pushing back against religious gatekeepers and pushing back at the Anglican Church at the time. The, you know, the clergy and all that church hierarchy. I believe very strongly one of the things that he said was, you know, Jesus has come to speak to us and to teach us individually, right? So this idea that we as individuals, we all have access to the truth, we all can discern it, and we don't need this hierarchy and all these peoples to tell us what is or is not true. So as you can imagine, in the 1600s, this was not a very popular idea. So he ended up in jail a lot. Which started a long tradition for Quakers in general to do a lot of jail time over the next several hundred years. And so we generally refer to ourselves as the Religious Society of Friends, and the term Quaker came as a bit of a joke about George Fox, because he was, you know, in cuffs in front of a magistrate, and he said to the judge, like, you should quake before the will of God. And so kind of since then, Quakers have gotten that term. And so, right, a big thing for Quakers is living out this truth that we've discerned, but also speaking very precisely and accurately, and making sure that we're speaking truly, which means that we end up being real sticklers on language. So we don't call what we do on Sunday morning church. We call that our meeting for worship. We don't even call it Sunday morning, technically. It's first day, and then second day, and then seventh day. And so Quakers have gone to jail for being stickers on language. That's something we care a lot about. And in general, we don't have a hierarchy. There's no clergy. There's no presidents. Really, the only distinction of note is the clerk, who's mostly in charge of just the logistics of the meeting itself. And so I think it's important to point out that Quakers in general have a really good track record of discerning truth. Quakers were the first white abolitionists in both England and America. We were also some of the first suffragists. Quakers have always been a peace church, like opposing all wars since its inception. Even in the World War II, starting its own ambulance service as a way for Quakers to not be directly involved in fighting. And so in general, much of the history of Friends is one of opposing the cultural norms at that time and advocating and actively working for what we believe to be true. And in general, Quakers have been on the right side of history, you know, kind of looking often several hundred years ahead of the wider culture, which begs the question, what is it about Quakers and what is it about Quakerism that leads us to have these strong leanings and convictions, but also leads us to have these convictions in opposition to the larger culture, to fight these political battles, to do it at really great cost. And a huge reason for that is that Quakers care a lot about knowing what is true, but also by living what is true. And so we approach this kind of in a couple different ways. Firstly, Quakers make a strong distinction about what is true for an individual at a given time. What path should I take? What should I say? What should I do? This is our process of individual discernment, which Vernon will talk about. Then we have these things called queries, which are sets of questions kind of determined by other Quakers and are meant for individuals and for different meetings to aid in our discernment, which Ellen will talk about. And then kind of the second part about discerning truth is what is true generally, right? What is true for us as a community, what is true for our own individual Quaker meeting, but what is true for everybody, right? Should Quakers own slaves? Should slaves exist? What do we then do about that? How Quakers discern our truth for a wider community is something that Lauren will touch on. And then once we have determined what is true, what do we do about that? Right, so we want to live that out, but one of the things that we also want to do is write that down, kind of keep a record. And so our each kind of group of meetings have what we call our faith and practice, which is a little handbook that we put out to our meetings to kind of give people advice of what to do in general. So Anne will talk about that. And if we have time, there can be some time for question and answers if we haven't already answered all the questions of life there are. So yeah, thank you so much.
Okay, my name is Vernon Layton, and I'd be focusing on understanding truth through individual discernment. When talking about Quakers seeking after truth, it is useful to situate the cultural context of the earliest Quakers. Quakerism coalesced, as Dan said, in the 1600s in Britain. The 1600s in Europe also saw the rise of modern science, which rejects the idea of accepting truth through sanctioned authorities in favor of direct observation. For example, in his university days in the 1580s, Galileo rejected the authority of Aristotle with regard to the natural world. Most of the early Quakers were children of Puritans and embraced some of their ideas, but not others. For their part, Puritans and other Protestants had rejected the authority of the Catholic Church. According to the historian Perry Miller, the ancient theologian who most influenced the Puritans was Augustine of Hippo. Augustine wrote, "O truth, truth, how inwardly even then did the marrow of my soul pant after thee." When theologians frequently in numerous and huge books sounded out thy name to me, I hungered and thirsted not even after those first works of thine, but after thee thyself, the truth. Likewise, in the Religious Society of Friends, we value the direct perception of the truth through inward reflection as opposed to receiving truth from others. In the Faith and Practice book of our own Northern Yearly Meeting, this inward reflection is called engaging in a spiritual dialogue with the inner guide. As Dan mentioned, an important early leader of the Quaker movement was George Fox. One of his most famous quotes, he said, "You will say Christ saith this, and the apostles say this, but what canst thou say? Art thou a child of light, and hast thou walked in the light? And what thou speakest, is it inwardly from God?" This quotation places the individual leadings of all people on the same level as the scriptures and religious authorities. What canst thou say? All people have a direct access to spiritual truth. Once this inward truth is discerned, anyone might speak in meeting. Here is a quote from Britain Faith and Practice, originally from 1967. "To all, waiting in expectancy, at moments and in some measure, is given a sense of the living touch of God. At such moments there may come the kindling of mind and heart which impels obedience to speak under the immediate promptings of the Holy Spirit. This is the ministry of inspiration, the prophetic ministry in the true sense. When the spoken word pierces to the heart of our relationship to God and unveils the living presence of Christ in the midst of the worshiping group and in its separate members. Sometimes when I talk to people who are learning about unprogrammed Quaker worship, they say, 'So unprogrammed friends don't have ministers.' And I reply, 'No, no, you've got it backwards. We do have ministers. We just don't have a congregation.'" There is naturally the problem that arises when the individual leadings differ from one another. Who's right? That leads us to groups of friends seeking truth together in corporate worship, and for that I will...
Good morning.
Good morning.
If you weren't all friends, I'd be quaking right now. But you all look very familiar and friendly. I'm Ellen Ott, and I am a member of the Winona Friends meeting, and I'm going to be speaking about queries. So queries are questions, of course, and we use queries to, in various settings, we use queries at the for meeting for worship sometimes. We use queries when we discern business. We use queries in what we call clearness committees, which are more formal groups of people that may help at the request of a member to help them discern the truth. So for example, if someone were to get married or is contemplating a separation from their partner, they may ask for a clearness committee to help them discern how to proceed with something. Sometimes queries come along with what are called advices. So friends in the past will write in our faith and practice or publish pamphlets, and the questions are embedded in advices. So for example, the query comes as the second sentence in this, but it starts as, be honest with yourself. What unpalatable truths might you be evading? When you recognize shortcomings, do not be discouraged. In worship together, we can find the assurance of God's love and strength to go on with renewed courage. Another question, or another example of a query embedded in an advice would be, do you respect that of God in everyone, though it may be expressed in unfamiliar ways or be difficult to discern? Each of us has a particular experience of God, and each must find the way to be true to it. So often we'll use these queries to focus in meeting, because we meet in silence, and anyone who's done that recognizes that it's pretty difficult to focus your thoughts at times. So we will often use queries at the beginning of our silence. Some describe the use of queries as a gut check. Just let's see where we're at with our faith. One famous query that we use is in relation to our peace testimony. So most of the queries will reference back to a testimony. One of our testimonies is the peace testimony. So one of the kind of famous queries that every Quaker has heard is, am I continuing to live in the virtue of that life that takes away the occasion of all wars? This simple query directly ties to our peace testimony and calls for an integrated approach to peace. The query calls us out to live more authentic and integrated lives and do and support things that further peace and nonviolent resolution to conflict. And we often recognize ways that we're not doing this. And friends are humans too. I know that Lauren is a card-carrying member of the Association of Bad Friends. So that we try to have a sense of humor about how difficult this is at times and how you know, we're not always going to behave in those ways that we know are right. Queries are kind of spiritual and moral inventory that friends do well to continue asking. One that I really like is, do I come to meeting for worship with heart and mind prepared? And this simple question is loaded with all kinds of inferences. For example, it poses how useful some sort of daily or regular practice of meditation, prayer, readings, something inspirational keeps us grounded through the week and keeps the spiritual process alive, so that when we attend meeting for worship on Sundays, we're already centered in the light, which is more useful to the group in that spiritual process. So queries are a way that we discern truth, mostly in ourselves, but it often will bring up other things and may lead a person to speak in meeting. When we speak in meeting, we try to speak from a pure place, a place that is personal, but also we feel has some information for others in the meeting. I think that's, the advices come usually from writings, past and present. Some of the advices come from the 1600s, and those are pretty easy to pick out when you're reading them. They just use language that's really old, and they're kind of quaint. But then some of the advices come from present times, and that something about Quakerism that I always really appreciated is that we gain truth not only from what people knew in the 1500s and 1600s, but also what they were talking about in the 1980s and 1950s and the 2000s. That truth is always being revealed to us, and that we do well to discern truth in lots of different writings. I think that's it on queries. I'll just end with this. Quakers use queries as a guide for self-examination, as a framework for periodically examining, clarifying, and prayerfully considering the direction of our individual lives and the life of the meeting community. Quakers explore many facets of their daily lives to be sure that each is living in harmony with the Quaker community and the wider communities in the planet. And I'll just end with this quote from Rilke that I think speaks well to our faith and probably to Unitarians. The only journey is the one within.
Good morning. I'm Lauren Layton, and I'm quaking just because I don't like public speaking. So I'm here to talk about searching for truth or discernment at the group level. And we have two methods that we avail to ourselves. One is what we use with individuals, and another is for the group as a whole. And clearness committees, as mentioned earlier, they're formed to assist an individual with a leading or a decision. And then I'll talk about threshing sessions, which is something that the group uses. It's a meeting used in searching or wrestling with a decision that just can't be settled at a business meeting. So a clearness committee is formed by members of a meeting when an individual is seeking membership of the Religious Society Friends, or a couple comes to us, they want to be married under the care of the meeting. A committee will consist of members with experience in Quaker process, and this is true of larger meetings where there will be, committees will be appointed. In smaller groups, friends just volunteer. And the individuals may even ask that a few certain friends be in their be on their clearness committee. And clearness committees can also be formed when an individual is wrestling with a life change, maybe a personal leading, a spiritual need, social action. To quote from Faith and Practice, we can lift up our vulnerabilities and our difficulties with one another. Attentive listening is fundamental to how we assist one another in times of personal challenge and need. The clearness committee meets, it's a worshipful time, and it fosters deep listening, a listening more carefully. The work is deeply confidential. The committee does not give advice or bring their own solutions to the meeting. The result, and again I'm going to quote from Faith and Practice, the result is to come to clearness or a deep inner assurance. This may not be a one-time experience, or the work may be ongoing depending on the need. Integrity is crucial to this process. Also, Faith and Practice reminds us that Clearness Committee is not a therapy group, that and the meeting should have lists of resources available for when the needs are beyond the committee's call. And a threshing session, and threshing is that old agricultural term where you separate the seed from the plant, the Bible quote, you separate the wheat from the chaff. And a threshing session is used when a meeting has a controversial decision to be made that's beyond the ability of the business meeting. We, as Quakers in our business, we seek unity or consensus. We don't vote or use majority rule in our business meetings. And when there is no consensus, the meeting may call for a threshing session, which is held at a separate time from meeting for business. And at that other time and place, it's kind of worshipful. It will start and it will end with a moment of silence. To quote Faith and Practice, the meeting listens to each friend and each friend listens to the meeting. There is no intention of coming to a decision. Differences are to be aired and faced. And I lucked out this week because Minneapolis Friends is conducting a threshing session this afternoon. And the clerk of the meeting sent out a notice this week, and I'm going to quote it all because it really saved me a lot of time and effort and preparation. He just was so succinct. It's like, oh, I need this. And in his email, he uses the word light, and we've used that before, and that's sort of synonymous with God and spirit. Anyway, so he sent out this reminder to friends. Threshing session is well named. It's an opportunity for the meeting to thresh at a topic, in the sense of a threshing machine, in order to discover the grains of truth that can lead us to a common understanding of what the light wants from us as a community. It is important that all friends' concerns and wishes get put on the threshing floor so we can, as best as possible, see and understand the communal perspective. The session will be facilitated similar to the discussion portion of a topic in monthly meeting, where friends who wish to speak are recognized and have the floor. We will intersperse silence in the session so we can, as best as possible, stay grounded in the light. We will not make a business decision, but we may come to what decision can be made at the next monthly meeting. And monthly meeting would be the next business meeting. And with that, I will turn it over to Anne, who will kind of talk about, when I quoted from Faith and Practice, what am I quoting from? So.
And I'm Anne Plummer. Thanks again for inviting us here to talk a little bit about Quakerism and Truth. So we are the Winona Preparative Meeting, and we're part of Northern Yearly Meeting. So that is an organization of friends, meetings, and worship groups in Minnesota, Wisconsin, and also some groups in Iowa and North Dakota. There are about 35 groups. These individual meetings are part of the larger worldwide family of the Religious Society of Friends. Within that family, NYM is affiliated with Friends General Conference. Other branches of Quakerism include Friends United Meetings and Evangelical Friends International. So the first edition of Northern Yearly Meetings, Faith and Practice, was published in 2017. And it supplies our statement of faith and descriptions of Quaker practice as we aspire to live our faith here in the Upper Midwest. The faith section includes perspectives on Quakers' historically rooted testimonies that you've heard a little bit about. They include simplicity, peace, integrity, and I think integrity is where we talk the most about truth, community, equality, care for the earth. And then that's followed by sections covering Quaker practice and history. So this edition of the Faith and Practice includes queries in each chapter. In most cases, it's not possible to answer those queries with a simple yes or no. And the goal has been to elicit more detailed responses that are new each time. We're also encouraged to bring our own queries to our practice. So the faith and practice of Northern Yearly Meeting is unique to our yearly meeting, and it was not adopted as a whole from any other yearly meeting. No chapter was the work of one person. Faith and Practice committee members changed over the 20 plus years of writing that it took and publishing, and they cooperatively finalized each chapter. Drafts of a single theme were sent to all groups, including our group, and the committee collected feedback and rewrote many times. Then each chapter received final approval from NYM. So I'll just quote one of the queries in our Faith and Practice. One important aspect of queries is the expectation that each time an individual or a meeting looks deeply at a given query, the answer that comes forth might be different. Queries can help us rediscover old truths, look at things freshly, and support us in not becoming trapped in rigid practices without fresh light. So thanks again for inviting us, and I'm sure that any of us will be happy to answer any questions over coffee.
Is this live? Yes. I believe we have a couple minutes for questions. Thank you so much, by the way. Very grateful. Lots of great information. Thank you.
Could you give us a personal example of discernment that one of you went through?
So when me and my spouse decided to get married, we went through a clearness committee. And so we actually went through two different ones. One that we did formally with other Quakers, and kind of, you know, since we are a smaller meeting, a lot of our, some of the logistical stuff is handled by Minneapolis friends. We're kind of underneath some of their care. So we had a clearness committee with both some Quakers from Minneapolis, but then we wanted to really kind of imbue the spirit of a clearness committee. So we just had, we invited close friends of ours in kind of various stages of marriage. Two friends that had been married for, lowercase friends, Quaker friends, two friends that had been married for 30 years, a friend that had been divorced before, another set of friends that had been together for a long period of time but had never been married. And so kind of just came forward with the, we're thinking about doing this, is this a good idea? Or what are the, you know, and so that session was very helpful to just bounce ideas back and forth. And really kind of the idea is asking a lot of open-ended questions in that kind of setting. And, you know, me and my partner had been together for, I think, 7 years at that time. And through that experience, like, a lot of things came up that we had never talked about or never thought about. So I think a huge part of, you know, Quakers kind of essentially invented consensus or have been heavily involved in how that process works. So all our decisions are made in consensus. And the huge part of that idea is that there's truth, you know, outside of yourself, and we need to listen to other folks, and those folks can, like, bring truth to us, and bouncing those ideas back and forth. So that, for me, that experience was really a good example of seeing that to be true, and, like, a really close personal thing.